This is Audible.
Lose Weight Now, The Easy Way, by Alan Carr. Alan Carr's Easy Way. Alan Carr was a chain smoker for over 30 years. In 1983, after countless failed attempts to quit, he went from 100 cigarettes a day to zero, without suffering withdrawal pangs, without using willpower, and without putting on weight. He realized that he had discovered what the world had been waiting for, the easy way to stop smoking, and embarked on a mission to help cure the world's smokers. As a result of the phenomenal success of his method, he gained an international reputation as the world's leading expert on stopping smoking, and his network of clinics now spans the globe. His first book, Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking, has sold over 12 million copies, remains an international bestseller, and has been published in over 40 different languages. Hundreds of thousands of smokers have successfully quit at Alan Carr's Easy Way clinics, where, with a success rate of over 90%, he guarantees you'll find it easy to stop or your money back. Alan Carr's Easy Way method has been successfully applied to a host of issues, including weight control, alcohol and other drug addictions, worrying, children smoking, and fear of flying. Alan Carr's Easy Way to Lose Weight has sold over 1 million copies, and Lose Weight Now is the new, updated presentation of the method. Weight control, alcohol and other drug consultations are available at some of Alan Carr's clinics, and there's also a full corporate service to help employees and increase productivity in the workplace. Should you require any assistance or if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact your nearest clinic. For more information about Alan Carr's Easy Way, please visit www.alancarr.com. Introduction. What I remember most about my early years at school was being teased mercilessly in the playground because I was fat. By the age of 13, the situation had got so out of hand that my father took me to Weight Watchers. I followed the strict regime, weighing everything I ate, using low-calorie powdered milk in my low-calorie cereal, carefully ensuring that I didn't exceed the meagre rations of butter, cheese, and other high-calorie luxuries allowed. I was surprised at how easy it was to get used to the new foods I was forcing myself to eat. Even the powdered milk, which initially tasted truly awful, soon became perfectly palatable. And I lost weight. However, after the initial novelty had worn off, the whole process began to get me down. Each morning, I'd wake up thinking about what I was going to allow myself to eat that day. I felt a slave to the diet, and found my reserves of willpower gradually being depleted as the lure of forbidden foods increased. And as I lost weight, my motivation to keep to the diet weakened. I felt I deserved to reward myself with the odd chocolate bar or cheese sandwich between meals, and so the weight crept back up. From that time until the age of 35, I fought a continuous battle against weight gain, trying all sorts of diets. Willpower didn't help. For over 20 years, my weight went up and down depending on whether I was following a diet or indulging myself. I was so unhappy with my body, and so miserable that I was unable to solve the problem, that it eventually affected me psychologically, and I suffered from various eating disorders. That all changed after I became involved with Alan Carr's Easy Way. In 1989, I had the truly extraordinary experience of stopping smoking easily, painlessly, and permanently at Alan Carr's clinic. I realized at once that Alan Carr had devised a method that could help millions of people all over the world, and wrote to him asking to join him in his mission. I was extremely fortunate to be accepted, and even luckier later to be appointed managing director of the company formed to spread the method all over the world. Today, more than 400,000 people have attended our clinics in over 45 countries, and Alan Carr's Easy Way books have been translated into over 40 languages, have sold more than 13 million copies, and have been read by an estimated 30 to 40 million people. This phenomenal success has been achieved not through advertising or marketing, but through the personal recommendations of the millions of people who have succeeded with the method. Alan Carr's Easy Way has spread all over the world for one reason alone. Because it works. Although I didn't put on weight after I stopped smoking with Alan Carr's Easy Way, I remained trapped in the continuous struggle to keep it down until Alan applied his method to weight control. Alan and I worked closely together, and he asked me for my comments on his first draft of Alan Carr's Easy Way to Lose Weight. I had no idea it was going to transform my life so radically for the better. As I read through the text, I found the powerful logic irrefutable. By the end, I knew that my weight problem was solved. No longer did I have to use willpower to deny myself forbidden foods. No longer did I have to weigh what I ate. No longer did I have to feel deprived because I couldn't eat as much as I wanted, or guilty because I'd eaten too much. Gone was the tug of war in my mind, which made the whole issue of food and eating such a nightmare. By following Alan's instructions, I escaped from that slavery, and found it easy to reach and stay my ideal weight. Far from feeling miserable or deprived, I enjoyed the process right from the start. It was a revelation to me that I didn't have to avoid food to be thin, and that I could look forward to and enjoy eating and still be my ideal weight. Waking up in the morning full of energy and free to eat whatever you like is such a liberating experience. Seeing your slim body in the mirror and knowing that you never have to worry about it expanding again is truly wonderful. That's the marvelous transformation that happened to me. Lose Weight Now presents Alan Carr's method in a new, updated, and easily accessible format, which, with the added help of a hypnotherapy CD, makes it even simpler and more enjoyable to solve your weight problem. I very much hope it transforms your life in the fantastic way it has transformed mine. Robin Haley, Managing Director, Alan Carr's Easy Way International Limited. Chapter 1. The Key. In this chapter, this book is the key to solving your weight problem. Junk food. The smoking connection. Willpower. The first instruction. Eat as much of your favorite foods as you want, whenever you want, as often as you want, and be the exact weight you want to be without dieting, special exercise, using willpower, or feeling deprived. Do you find it hard to imagine that could possibly be achievable? I promise you it is. By reading this book with an open mind, you will discover a wonderful new life that may now seem beyond your dreams. A life in which you enjoy every meal, in which you're slim, fit, healthy, and bursting with an energy you'd forgotten even existed. An active, sociable, long, and happy life. And achieving that new life will be easy. Maybe you think that's too good to be true. Perhaps it goes against everything you've ever been told about weight loss. Has what you've been told before worked for you? If it had, you wouldn't be reading this book. Eating is one of life's great pleasures. We look forward to mealtimes with excitement. We shop for food with anticipation. We celebrate our achievements, tout for business, and court prospective lovers by booking a table at a restaurant or preparing something special at home. Few of mankind's customs have survived the test of time quite like the feast. For thousands of years, we've associated food and eating with good times. Yet how often do you feel good after a meal? I always thought of myself as a food lover. I was the ideal dinner guest, a big eater who wasn't fussy. And yet more often than not, when I finished a meal, it wasn't with a feeling of joy or satisfaction, but one of both physical and mental discomfort. I didn't really taste what I ate. I just shoveled it down. My belly would feel bloated and tight like a drum. I frequently suffered from indigestion and heartburn, and even worse was my guilt and helplessness as I loosened a button or two while cursing myself for ending up in this condition yet again. You'd think that would be enough to put anyone off overeating for a while. Yet by the time the next mealtime came around, I'd be back to square one, and going through the same torture all over again. I knew I ate too much. I only had to look at my ever-expanding belly in the mirror to see that. I had never regarded eating and overeating as separate entities. To me, overeating was merely an extension of eating, probably caused by the fact that I liked eating so much. Smokers believe the problems they have quitting are because they enjoy smoking so much. In fact, they never do. They only believe they do because they feel miserable and deprived when they're not allowed to smoke. In the same way, overeaters believe their problem is that they enjoy eating too much. You might well feel miserable and deprived whenever you're not allowed to eat as much as you want, but that doesn't mean you enjoy overeating. As you probably know, I'm famous for discovering a method that enables any smoker to find it easy and enjoyable to quit. I was a smoker for 33 years. I tried to quit many times by using willpower, but always fell back into the trap. I was convinced that I couldn't cope with or enjoy life without smoking, but I longed to be free. When I finally quit permanently, it took no willpower. I didn't feel deprived, and I never missed it. Today, I'm widely accepted as the world's leading stop-smoking expert. My book, Alan Carr's Easy Way to Stop Smoking, has sold over 12 million copies, and we have a worldwide clinic network. I learned about the nature of addiction by quitting smoking. What I wasn't aware of was that I was also addicted to the processed sugar in junk food, and that was one of the major causes of my overeating. It was the simple realization that smoking was an addiction, not something I did for pleasure, that enabled me to discover my stop-smoking method and escape from that prison. I later realized that the method also works for other addictions and problems, including overeating. Making the connection. I must admit, I didn't see it that way to begin with. While I could see quite clearly that my method could be applied to alcohol and all drug addictions, applying it to food initially stretched my mind. There were two reasons for this. First, at the heart of the method is the fact that it's easy to quit smoking completely, but that it requires incredible willpower to cut down or control your intake. Obviously, cutting out food completely is out of the question. Second, I knew that eating can be a genuine pleasure and does actually satisfy hunger, whereas the pleasure of smoking is an illusion, and the cigarette creates the hunger it seems to relieve. But through my discovery of the way to escape the smoking trap, I realized that I had been the victim of brainwashing from the day I was born, and that applied to eating as much as it did to smoking. Fact box. In 2005, the World Health Organization estimated that 1.6 billion adults were overweight, and it predicted this figure would rise to 2.3 billion by 2015. In the developed world, over 50% of adults are overweight. In the USA, the figure is over 70%. The percentage of overweight children in the developed world has more than doubled in the last 40 years, from around 10% to over 20% today. This is a modern problem, coinciding with the boom in junk foods over the last 50 years. The tobacco industry is hugely powerful and feeds us lies and illusions in ingeniously subtle ways. Just as powerful as big tobacco is the food industry. If big food simply produced the food we need to keep fit and healthy, it wouldn't be anything like the size it is, nor would we. The fact is that the food industry encourages us to overeat. If the supermarket only stocked the natural foods that we genuinely enjoy and need to be healthy, fit, and happy, its fat profits would shrink. The vast bulk of food on supermarket shelves is surplus to our requirements. When I felt that my method could not be applied to weight loss, I was overlooking a crucial point. I was comparing smoking to eating. The first, a disgusting, smelly, unhealthy, antisocial addiction that makes us feel terrible and gives us no benefits whatsoever. The second, an enjoyable, sociable activity that satisfies our hunger, gives us energy, and keeps us alive. Eureka! What I should have been comparing it to was not eating, but overeating. It was like a light bulb coming on in my brain, a eureka moment, just like the time I decided to embark on my mission to cure the world of smoking. Until the penny dropped, I had regarded overeating as a mere extension of eating. Too much of a good thing. I now realized that the two were entirely different. The effects of overeating have a lot in common with the effects of smoking. On the physical side, tiredness and lethargy, indigestion and heartburn, lack of fitness, obesity, heart disease, and all sorts of other life-threatening illnesses. On the mental side, an illusion of pleasure, guilt, helplessness, lack of self-esteem and sex drive, slavery and misery. So I asked myself the question, since smoking is caused by an addiction to nicotine, is overeating caused by eating junk food and an addiction to processed sugar? And the more I thought about it, the more I realized this was the case. The yo-yo effect. Diets restrict your intake of food in an attempt to help you lose weight. Usually, people who fall into the trap of trying to solve their weight problem by dieting end up in a vicious circle known as the yo-yo effect. An endless cycle of restricting your intake to lose weight, putting on weight again once you start to eat more, and then restricting your intake again to lose the weight once more. It's very unhealthy for your body to expand and shrink over and over again. Worse, your life is dominated by having constantly to think about what, when, and how much you can allow yourself to eat. Dieting is a nightmare and will never solve your weight problem. With my method, you won't have to change your lifestyle. You'll be able to go out to eat with friends and family and enjoy other social events without feeling deprived. I mentioned before that it's much harder to cut down than to quit, because cutting down requires willpower. And not just a bit of willpower for a few days or weeks. It requires an immense amount of willpower for the rest of your life. On the other hand, quitting altogether requires no willpower at all, provided you don't feel you're making a sacrifice. In fact, it's easy. This applies to overeating. All you have to do is reverse the brainwashing that has led you to believe that overeating is pleasurable. If you try to cut down, you perpetuate the illusion that you're being deprived and you become miserable and irritable. Junk food becomes more and more precious and you become convinced that the only way to feel better is to stuff your face. Eventually, you reach breaking point. You tell yourself that you deserve a reward and go on a binge, undoing all the hard work you put in. It's the same story with every diet. Diets don't work. My method for losing weight is not a diet. When I use the term diet in this book, I am referring to the restrictive regime we go on to lose weight through willpower. Diet can also mean the total food that one consumes, i.e. one's intake. However, to avoid confusion, I'll refer to that as intake. The problem is not eating, but overeating. This may give you the impression that the issue is simply the amount you consume, and that you need to eat less. No, the problem is not so much the quantity of food you eat as the type. Perhaps you fear that you'll no longer be allowed to eat your favorite foods. Not so. If you follow the simple guidelines in this book, you'll be able to eat as much of your favorite foods as you want without being overweight. What's more, you'll not need to count calories, weigh your food, or limit your intake by using willpower. So why don't I just give you the instructions now? I wish I could. I want to help you as quickly as possible. But in order to be happy to follow the instructions, you need first to understand the method. There's no need to worry. This won't take long, and you'll enjoy the journey. As we go through this book, I'll give you the simple instructions that will set you free. It's essential that you follow them and understand them. And that's the first instruction. Follow all the instructions. If there's anything you don't understand, go back and read it again until it becomes clear. I want you to get the maximum pleasure and enjoyment out of life, not to make you suffer or feel deprived. So carry on eating as you normally do while you read this book, and by the end, you'll have the joy of knowing that your weight problem is solved. Summary. My method is easy. Eating is a pleasure. Overeating is a pain. Dieting will not solve the problem, it will only make it worse. Follow all the instructions and you will find the key. Top tip number one. The pleasure of eating. Eating is one of life's great pleasures. If you eat natural foods, which are easy to digest, your body will work efficiently and you'll be your correct weight. You will neither feel bloated nor have indigestion. Real food is eaten in its natural state. Junk is processed, often with chemicals and unnatural additives and preservatives. Follow my method and you'll learn to recognize the difference between food and junk. You'll enjoy maximum pleasure from eating, become slim, and stay that way. Chapter 2. In a Nutshell. In this chapter, the squirrel. Wild animals are not overweight. The second instruction. Learning from nature. It's funny how the most everyday occurrences can trigger the most important discoveries. Isaac Newton had his moment of inspiration when an apple fell from a tree. For me, it was a squirrel that provided the crucial piece of evidence that enabled me to discover the secret of weight control. There was nothing unusual about a squirrel coming into my garden. We had daily visits, encouraged by the peanuts that my wife Joyce would generously scatter on the patio. We always enjoyed watching it performing fantastic acrobatics, its agility being a constant source of wonder. Our cat was fascinated too, albeit for different reasons. I find it difficult to love my cat when she's hunting some small, hapless animal. It's bad enough when it's one of those strident starlings, but when it's a robin or a blue tit, I find it impossible. On one occasion, I watched as she crept up and cornered a squirrel against the wall of the neighbour's house. I couldn't see any way out for the squirrel without a fight, and watched with interest to see how the cat would fare against this tough and nimble opponent. The squirrel simply turned and ran up the vertical wall. A few days later, I looked out of the window and saw the squirrel sitting on the patio, happily eating the nuts that Joyce had put out. My mind went back to the incident with the cat, and I thought to myself, "Eat too many of those, and there's no way you'll be able to climb the wall next time." As if it had read my mind, the squirrel immediately stopped eating the nuts and started burying them. I couldn't stop wondering why the squirrel had chosen to stop eating and start sorting. If Joyce had put a bowl of peanuts in front of me, I would have scoffed the lot. I was aware that gorging myself on snacks wasn't doing my figure any favours. So what? I wasn't planning to rush up any vertical walls in the foreseeable future. But there was something I couldn't understand. If I couldn't stop eating, how could the squirrel? Here was I, a member of the most intelligent species on the planet, being outsmarted by a mere rodent. For several days, I found myself pondering what I'd witnessed in the garden. I had no problem understanding the squirrel's behaviour. Anyone could see the sense in keeping some food back for later if you're a creature that can never be sure where your next meal is coming from. But how could the squirrel see that? How could an animal with a brain not much bigger than the nuts it was eating have the foresight to stop eating when food was abundant and store it away for later? Did it know that if it overate, it wouldn't be able to scale the wall to escape the cat in future? Was that why it didn't have a weight problem? The picture started to become clearer in my mind when I realized that not only had I never seen a squirrel with a weight problem, I had never seen a wild animal of any species that was overweight. Sure, there are animals like walruses and hippos that seem fat, but that's the shape that nature intended. It suits their lifestyle and the environment in which they live. I have never seen a walrus or hippo that is distinctly overweight compared to the rest of the herd. Think of the amazing images we see of animals in large groups. It could be a school of fish, a herd of water buffalo, a flock of geese. Their individual sizes may differ, but they're all the same shape, the same proportion. There are none that lag behind the others, weighed down by an oversized belly caused by overeating. Fact box. 50% of humans in the developed world are overweight. 0% of wild animals are overweight. It dawned on me that human intelligence isn't the only thing that sets us apart from the animal kingdom. We are also the only species on the planet that has weight problems. We and the domesticated animals whose eating habits we control. This was my eureka moment. It was an overwhelming piece of evidence. 99.99% of all creatures on Earth eat as much of their favorite foods as they want, as often as they want, without being overweight. Obviously, there was a simple secret, simple enough for a squirrel to comprehend, and yet the most intelligent species on the planet hadn't worked it out. Could it be that by some ironic twist, intelligence has become the very reason for our ignorance? Perhaps the fact that we have more brain power than any other species has led us away from the truth. There's no shortage of fables that warn how arrogance and complacency can lead us to overlook the simplest truths. Why do we need nutritionists to tell us what to eat to keep in shape? Animals don't. They know instinctively what they should and shouldn't eat. And so did we once upon a time. Our intellect has led us to think differently, so differently that it has overridden the wisdom of our instincts. Follow your instincts. There are so many contradictory diet books, no wonder we're confused. They're full of technical information and statistics that even scientists can't fully understand. In fact, all that technical detail is an effort to blind us to the inadequacies of the diets themselves. The only information we really need is the information we were born with, instinct. It wasn't intelligence that made the squirrel stop eating. It was instinct. And it was observing the squirrel that made me think how nice it would be to be able to eat as much of your favorite foods as you want, whenever you want, as often as you want, and be the exact weight you want to be without dieting, special exercise, using willpower, or feeling deprived. When I first presented you with this idea, you may have thought it sounded too good to be true. When is life ever that simple? In fact, 99.99% of the animal kingdom finds it that simple. Let's take a closer look and discover how they do it. You might point to the difficulty animals have in finding food and taking it back to their families. Yes, food is often scarce, and that can restrict their consumption and even lead to starvation. But what about when food is abundant? Why don't you see animals gorging themselves and getting fat? I've already told you about the squirrel. Another good example is the termite. Termites feast on rotten wood. That may not strike you as a mouth-watering choice, and you could argue that you wouldn't be overweight either if that was all you ate. To the termite, rotten wood is the nectar of the gods. It's their favorite food, and there's no shortage of it. Yet termites do not get overweight. They don't keep eating until they can no longer move. Somehow, they know when to stop. Before we look more closely at the reasons why humans have departed from the rest of the animal kingdom in this respect, I want to point out that Alan Carr's Easy Way method isn't magic. Like those who have quit smoking, some people who have lost weight by this method have described it as such, but that's purely a figure of speech. There's nothing mysterious about my method. It's not magic, and it's not a diet. I will not be asking you to control your intake by using willpower. By reading this book, you'll understand that overeating is a consequence of incorrect eating. I'm not asking you simply to trust me or have faith. I'm asking you to keep an open mind. Provided you understand the fundamental principles of the method, you'll also understand the reasons behind my instructions, and then you'll find it easy and enjoyable to follow them. The second instruction is, keep an open mind. This is very important. I've yet to meet a person who'll admit to having a closed mind. You may be convinced that you have an open mind, in which case the chances are it's closed. If you're already convinced, you're not open to other possibilities. By taking a relaxed approach and using your common sense, you'll open your mind, your fears will dissolve, and you'll find it easy to understand and follow my method. I always thought of myself as open-minded. When I discovered the secret to being slim, fit, and healthy, I couldn't understand how I'd closed my mind to such obvious facts for so many years. It was an enormous relief to open my mind and free myself from my weight problem. Summary. Animals stop eating when their hunger is satisfied. The only species that have weight problems are humans and their domesticated animals. Our intellect overrides the wisdom of our instincts. The secret to correct eating is simple. 99.99% of animals understand it. Easy way is not a diet. Open your mind by accepting that it may have been closed. Top tip number 2. Follow your instincts. 99.99% of animals eat as much of their favorite foods as they want, as often as they want, without being overweight. Learn which foods best suit you. You will not solve your weight problem by dieting, which requires willpower and makes you feel deprived. Chapter 3. The Brainwashing. In this chapter, do you choose what you eat? Why diets don't work? The third instruction. Empower, not willpower. You have not chosen the way you eat now. It's the result of a lifetime's brainwashing. Although I thought of myself as a food lover, I wasn't happy with my eating habits. The anticipation I felt before a meal was not matched by a feeling of satisfaction afterwards. I knew there was something wrong, but I couldn't seem to change the way I ate, and it made me feel stupid and inadequate. I now know there's nothing to be ashamed of. Overeaters are not being foolish, because the choices they make when it comes to eating are not free choices at all. They're the result of a lifetime's brainwashing. The vast majority of meals you've consumed since the day you were born were not chosen by you. Since you haven't been the one in charge, there's no reason for you to feel responsible for the way your eating habits have evolved. Now you're going to take charge of what you eat. You know there's something wrong with your eating habits, but you don't know how to change them. The first thing to get clear in your mind is that you're changing a situation that you're unhappy with for the purely selfish reason that you'll enjoy life infinitely more. People usually feel a sense of doom and gloom whenever they try to solve their weight problem, because they believe it means going on a diet or doing a course of strenuous exercise, or both. It's a daunting and miserable prospect, requiring massive willpower. Fortunately, there's a simple and enjoyable alternative. Alan Carr's Easy Way. It requires no willpower, nor does it restrict you to eating food you don't enjoy, nor require you to follow an exercise program. All you have to do is understand and follow the method, and you'll find yourself automatically changing your eating habits and enjoying the process. Many of you will have tried to lose weight by going on a diet. If you've been a keen follower of a low-calorie weight loss regime, the chances are that you're undernourished, your digestion is poor, and your health below par. With my method, you'll be eating what you want and getting all the nourishment you need. Your digestion will be working at its optimum, and you will lose weight. The Taste of Freedom. Perhaps you think I'm moving the goalposts by saying that you'll be changing the way you eat. If you think you already eat as much of your favorite foods as you want, and that's why you have a weight problem in the first place, think again. Let's look at your favorite foods with an open mind. The foods you currently consider to be your favorites aren't making you happy. If they were, you wouldn't be reading this book. What kind of favorite is it that makes you unhappy? Remember, your eating habits have been controlled by others from the day you were born. it's time to make your own choices. If you think the foods you currently consider to be your favourites are the foods that taste the best, open your mind. The beautiful truth is that the foods that taste best are, in fact, the best for you. You find this hard to believe because you've been brainwashed by the junk food manufacturers. Taste is easily led astray. Many luxury foods taste revolting initially. Take oysters, for example. Oysters used to be a poor man's staple, and it's not hard to see why. Who in their right mind would eat something with the consistency of phlegm and the flavour of salt water unless they had to? The same applies to caviar, foie gras, and a whole host of expensive delicacies that taste repugnant to anyone trying them for the first time. Have you ever eaten a hamburger and really focused on the flavours in your mouth? Now, if I told you the burger was made of dog meat, how do you think that would change your perception of the taste? I bet you'd spit it out pretty fast. Why? Is there any logical reason we should regard a cow, which spends its life covered in mud, excrement and flies, as something tasty to eat, while the thought of eating a dog appalls us? If so, why is the perception reversed in other cultures, where cows are sacred and dogs are seen as meat? Don't worry, I'm not about to claim that eating dog is the answer to your weight problem. I'm merely illustrating how we're brainwashed about what is and isn't good to eat. Is it the cow eaters or the dog eaters who've been brainwashed? The answer is both. It shows how susceptible we are to conditioning, for better or for worse. The rat trap. Rats are seen as dirty, disease-ridden, vicious creatures. The hamster, on the other hand, is regarded as a cute, cuddly little ball of fur. Yet the rat and the hamster are both rodents and actually look very similar. People who have pet rats will tell you they're clean, intelligent, and every bit as pleasant to keep as a hamster, which, given half a chance, will give you a nasty nip with its razor-sharp teeth. We regard some animals as our friends and others as our enemies. We don't realise we've been brainwashed. Dogs inflict twice as many fatal attacks on humans as sharks, yet we regard the dog as man's best friend and the shark as our mortal enemy. When it comes to food, our perceptions are also seldom based on fact and logic. They're more often an emotional response to our conditioning through books, films, TV, advertisements, and popular mythology. Why we eat junk. From birth, our eating habits are controlled by others. Think about it. Were you breastfed as a baby or given the bottle? Whose decision was that? Who decided when it was time to wean you off milk and move you on to solids? As you grew older, did you decide the school menu or the contents of your lunchbox? At work, can you choose anything you like for lunch? And even when you come home, do you decide what you're having for dinner? Even if you're doing the cooking, you're still restricted by your budget and what's available. Most of the meals we've eaten since the day we were born were not the result of our personal choice. We eat according to the influences of our upbringing. You might be thinking, my problem isn't the meals I eat, it's the snacking in between, the sweets I pick up at the till. Surely that's my own free will. It isn't. Your desire to pick up a chocolate bar is triggered by an association in your mind created by advertising. The junk food marketeers are only interested in selling as much of their addictive poisons to as many people as possible. There's no limit to the claims they'll make, often in fiendishly subtle ways, to create the impression that this lethal combination of sugar and fat gives you energy, heightened sex appeal, and makes you cool. Some are even sold at certain times of year only, such as limited edition summer ice cream flavors, as if they're a seasonal product like fruit. They aren't interested in your figure, health, well-being, or happiness, only in getting you hooked. Once the false image is planted in your mind, any association can trigger the desire for junk. You might hear the jingle from a chocolate bar ad, or see a car pass by featured in an ice cream commercial. This isn't choice, it's brainwashing. We're often not even in control of the amount we eat. If you're anything like I was, you'll polish off everything on your plate. We're conditioned to think it's rude or picky to leave food that somebody else has prepared for us. do you decide how much is put on the plate? When you're serving, do you know how hungry others are or what they want to eat? Do you pile the food up high so as not to appear stingy? All over the world, celebrations are marked by eating too much. Christmas lunch is a prime example. Even people who normally eat a moderate amount suddenly find themselves with the plate piled high with turkey, bacon, sausages, stuffing, and several different vegetables, all drowned in gravy, cranberry, and bread sauce. And as if that weren't enough, they then have to find room for a pudding made with suet and covered in brandy and butter, and they feel compelled to consume the lot. On a day when you should be having a wonderful time with your family, you end up bloated and lethargic, full of food which is supposed to give you pleasure, but in reality does the opposite. Your kidneys and liver can't remove all the toxins, and your stomach, intestines and bowels can't cope with the overload. This toxic surplus has to be stored in your body as fat. From now on, you're going to be the one in control of what you eat, rather than the other way round. You will decide what your favourite foods are. You will decide how much you consume and how often. You will be able to eat as much of your favourite foods as you want, whenever you want, as often as you want, and be the exact weight you want to be, without dieting, special exercise, using willpower, or feeling deprived. When most people read this, they assume there must be a catch. I assure you there isn't. If it were too good to be true, 99.99% of creatures on this planet wouldn't be doing it. If it works for them, surely it can work for you. What do you have to lose by giving it a go? Can you honestly say that you enjoy every meal you eat now? Take a moment to look at all the benefits I'm offering. In addition to the added pleasure you'll enjoy from eating, you'll feel lighter, healthier, more energetic and self-confident, and you'll never again suffer that horrible guilty feeling. What's more, because this isn't a diet, you won't have to go through the soul-destroying process of counting calories. When you think about the miserable business of measuring out your meagre daily allowance of butter or sugar, it's no wonder that it ends in failure. The basic flaw with diets is their short term. My method is designed to remove your problem permanently without willpower or feeling deprived. If you know people who seem to control their weight by dieting, don't be fooled into thinking they've succeeded in solving their problem. The fact that they have to resist the temptation of the donut makes it far more precious to them, and when they eventually run out of willpower, they balloon in size. If I asked you to stand on one leg with the other leg held up behind you, you'd probably think that's easy. What if I then asked you to hold your other leg up as well without falling over? You'd think I was being ridiculous. You wouldn't consider yourself a failure for not being able to do it. It's impossible. As long as you feel you're making a sacrifice, you'll never become free. Don't worry. With my method, you'll solve your weight problem without feeling deprived or miserable, and you'll be free to enjoy life to the full. When you go on a diet, you're being asked to do the impossible. This isn't obvious, because to begin with, you can achieve some success, which suggests the diet works. In fact, it only works as long as your willpower lasts. When you restrict your eating, you feel permanently hungry. You become obsessed with the thought of your next meal, and when it comes, it's a huge anticlimax. Compared to what you were used to eating, it's neither exciting nor enough, and you're left feeling miserable again. Dissatisfied, you eat slightly more than the diet allows, which makes you feel guilty. It's been established that most people who attempt to lose weight through dieting actually gain weight in the long term. Diets make food appear more precious. And if you finally reach your target weight, what are you meant to do then? Do you go on with the diet? Of course not. You're happy with the weight you are, and there's no way you're going to keep to the miserable rations it put you on. So you abandon the diet and go back to your old eating habits. In a fraction of the time it took you to lose the weight, you've put it all back on and more. It's virtually impossible to lose weight permanently by dieting, and the process itself is a nightmare. Your failures in the past were not caused by any deficiency on your part, but simply because you were using the wrong method. Remember, the purpose of my method is to enable you to get maximum enjoyment out of life. The way you've been eating up until now has made you miserable. We're going to help you change that for good. This is cause for celebration. Keep a positive attitude at all times. All you have to do is follow my method. The third instruction is, start off with a feeling of excitement. Forget about the past. Look forward to the future and cast off any sense of doom or gloom. Nothing bad is happening. On the contrary, something marvelous is taking place. You are about to reverse a lifetime's brainwashing, attain your ideal weight, and start enjoying life to the full. Summary. The way you eat now is a source of misery, not happiness. You've been brainwashed into thinking junk is your favorite food. Big food isn't interested in your well-being. Let's reverse the brainwashing. Something exciting is happening in your life. Top tip number 3. Beware of any food that has an ingredients list. Food with an ingredients list is processed. Over 17,000 new products appear on the supermarket shelves each year. Big food achieves this range by subtly changing the ingredients list on the packet. Don't be fooled. It's all junk. Chapter 4. The Incredible Machine. In this chapter, the human body and the car. Nature's guide. Where has our intelligence got us? The fourth instruction. Food for thought. Our body is infinitely more complex than any machine made by mankind, and yet we assume mankind is the expert on how to maintain it. There are two basic comparisons that help to clarify the thinking behind my method. The first is between man and wild animals. Remarkably, 99.99% of the animal kingdom, like the squirrel in my garden, have the secret to eating their favorite foods whenever they want while remaining their ideal weight. The second comparison is between our body and a car. They have a lot in common. They have similar basic requirements in order to perform their functions. Neither can operate without sufficient supplies of fuel and air, and both need to be maintained correctly. Don't worry if you don't have a degree in mechanical engineering or a PhD in medicine. I have no intention of blinding you with science. Even if you haven't learned to drive, you'll find this very easy to follow. The car is a fairly complex piece of machinery, but compared to your body, it's about as sophisticated as an old-fashioned typewriter compared to a modern laptop. The sophistication of the modern car is certainly impressive. Look after it carefully and it might last you 15 years. Now consider your body. Looked after carefully, how long do you think it might last? Currently, 67 years is the world's average life expectancy for human beings. Say I asked you to blink your right eye. No problem. But what if I had to get every one of the 7 billion people on the planet to blink their right eye at the same time? Even with the full might of modern communication systems, it's an impossible task. And yet a similar feat takes place continuously inside your body. Your lungs breathe in air, extract the oxygen, and pass it on to the bloodstream. Your heart pumps steadily and consistently to distribute the oxygenated blood to every part of your body. Your digestive system breaks down food, sorts the nutrients from the waste matter, and sends them on their way. Your immune system fights off infection and repairs injuries. And your internal thermostat makes sure that your body maintains its optimum temperature. Provided it's working properly, your body carries out these incredibly complex functions automatically, whether you're awake or asleep. Because it happens without any conscious effort on our part, we take it all for granted. Fortunately, we don't all have to understand the finer points of the internal combustion engine. When we buy a car, the experts provide a manufacturer's handbook. All we have to do is follow the instructions. Man designed the car, but he didn't design himself. Man has designed many amazing things, but he didn't design the most amazing creation on earth, the human being itself. Whether you believe it was God who created man, or that we evolved by natural selection over billions of years, or a combination of the two, it's clear that whoever or whatever force created our minds and bodies was infinitely more sophisticated than we are. So how did it expect us to know how to keep our bodies running smoothly? Who are we supposed to turn to for instructions? From birth, it's mankind who decides what we eat. How does mankind know? We're informed by dietitians, doctors, nutritionists, and more than anything else, from persuasive advertising and brainwashing by the junk food industry. Do you really think these people know best? Of course they don't. So what alternative do we have? Why, you may wonder, didn't the superior force that designed us in the first place provide us with our own manufacturer's handbook? That way we could know automatically what we should eat and when, without having to try and find the truth hidden amid the mass of contradictory information we're constantly fed by so-called experts. I have good news for you. It did. Our Creator, who or whatever it was, provided all living creatures with a manufacturer's handbook. I'll refer to it from now on as Nature's Guide. It's how our ancestors survived long before the supermarket, the ready meal, the microwave, and the dietitian came on the scene. Our forefathers didn't need to be told about calories and vitamins any more than you need to be told about the workings of the internal combustion engine for you to keep your car running. Nature's guide is what wild animals follow, and that's how they effortlessly maintain their ideal weight. You may feel there's a glaring contradiction in what I'm saying.